section86.com. We're changing the world of podcasting one show at a time.
86 Productions.
Mark, the best podcast providing the most in-depth insight and analysis into the world of professional wrestling. On today's show, we have Aaron, Roger, and Doug to join Andrew as we discuss this month's view from the turnbuckle. So, Aaron, The Undertaker announces that he's on SmackDown. Now, is this permanent or is this going to be something that is only temporary?
Well, I imagine it's only going to be for special events. We're not going to see him on SmackDown every single week, but he said that he's not going to let WrestleMania define him. And as we've seen for the past few years, he's really only appeared at WrestleMania, you know, his match with Bray Wyatt. And before that, it was Brock Lesnar. Those matches were only for WrestleMania. And obviously, this past year was Shane McMahon. It sounds like maybe he's actually going to come back and he'll have a big match at their pay-per-view in order to kind of help the buys or help people to actually subscribe to the network. And that's kind of what I'm expecting here. But the question that I'm going to pose to you, Doug, is, do you think that this is going to lead to a John Cena versus Undertaker at a pay-per-view, maybe a Royal Rumble or WrestleMania?
I think it's got to be a WrestleMania match. I know he just said WrestleMania is not going to define him, but that's really all he has left to give, especially to SmackDown. You have a bunch of young people in there, talented people that can put, you know, great matches on. Takeover Cena is the only blockbuster, I think, that is left to do.
And Roger, what about you?
I think the Rumble is probably where we're going to see Undertaker probably first show up. I mean, it's the Alamo Dome. I think it's 70,000 people. It's in Texas. So I expect him to set up whatever his WrestleMania match is there. I do agree with Doug. I think it's Cena-Taker. I think that was the plan for last year until Cena got hurt. So I think we'll see a little confrontation there. Maybe Taker eliminates Cena or Cena eliminates Taker, and then I think they have their match at 33.
I didn't even think about the fact that him and Cena were going to go at it, but it makes sense because, this is the question I have for you, Aaron. Do you have Cena go over against Taker if that's what they decide to do?
Well, having him say that he's not going to let WrestleMania define him anymore, having Cena go over him wouldn't be that big of a deal. You know, I mean, the fact that Lesnar went over him, that was such a monumental thing. That was a championship that no one will ever be able to hold because he was the first to do it after 20 some people. Having Cena go over, if I'm calling it right now, I would say Cena goes over. You know, it kind of gives him the rub, and then Taker would then quietly go off into the night. That would be my expectations. But I almost wonder if now, because there's so much new blood, that maybe Taker wants to wrestle some of these newer guys. I was thinking about when he was looking at AJ Styles, you know, like at Royal Rumble, the Phenom versus the Phenomenal One, you know, something like that. That's WWE. I mean, they would totally do that. You know, like the Best versus the Beast, you know, with CM Punk and Lesnar. I could see them doing something like that. So I don't know, but if he does wrestle Cena at this year's WrestleMania, I would say it's probably it at that point in time. So, Andy, I want to ask you, last show that we did, I don't know, you're like Nostradamus or something, because you kept talking about how WWE needs to do a cruiserweight show. And right after we record and right after it's released, they announced 205 Live.
Yeah. See, I have it good with the WWE. You know, they tell me all the stuff, or I just throw stuff out there and, you know, it happens. But no, in all seriousness, I just felt that that's something they would have to do, because I don't think they've done anything with the cruiserweights. I mean, when you look at everything that's going on, yeah, there's great matches, but it just seems like the crowd's not in it. And I think it's the Raw crowd. It seems that SmackDown, because the show is so tight and flows so well, why not have an extra hour to end the night with, you know, guys doing crazy flips and everything? And I think that's, I just thought it was smart that they did it. And I think that we'll see, well, like us as fans will benefit from it. My only concern is it going to be different because we're going to see it 52 times a year opposed to 10, what we saw with Cruiserweight Classic. What are your thoughts, Roger?
Well, I'm hoping that because they're finally going to get their own show, that we get more of a focus, we get better matches, you know, maybe it'll be a little bit more protected from, you know, kind of that, like, just being the filler match on Raw. Now, you know, the champion should be the main event of 205 Live. Now they could build up some of these challengers meaningful. So hopefully the cruiserweights actually start to mean something in the characters. I mean, I think part of it is the Raw crowd just didn't care. You know, they were treated as basically just a division, not superstars interacting with the rest of the roster. I almost think you needed to tape this in Full Sail, and because I think the NXT crowd will always appreciate the cruiserweights way more than any, you know, Raw or SmackDown crowd. The SmackDown crowd is better because SmackDown is a tighter 2-hour show, but I still think if you really want to recreate that CWC moment, you got to do this in front of Full Sail. They appreciate good wrestling.
Well, not only that, it's only going to probably be, what, an hour long? So you're going to do the same thing you did with the Cruiserweight Classic in the fact that you'll have maybe two matches on per show. So you can do it at Full Sail, and you can do a month's worth of shoots in, what, 2 days maybe? So you do that, you get it kind of set up, you have the whole time to practice and do everything. It's not like every week somebody's taking some wicked bump. So it would be great to do it in front of Full Sail. That's why I was also kind of hoping it would go to SmackDown, and the fact that then you kind of have that quicker match, that fast-paced match, and hopefully something that I've been hearing that they do the flips on Raw. It's just that they always do it and take the commercial break at that time. And that's something that I could see WWE doing, just because, I don't know, it's one of those, hey, we're going to block it out because it's in your area. You have to come here and see them actually do it.
One other thing to talk about the cruiserweights. Did anybody else find it weird that the show run by Stephanie McMahon, who specifically made fun of Daniel Bryan for being too small and not an A-plus player, was the show that ended up with the cruiserweights instead of Daniel Bryan, the guy who, of course, is one of the most legendary cruiserweights of all time? Like, that made no sense in the first place.
Well, you got to be a star.
You know, I totally agree. I think that it was kind of a weird thing for them to do the cruiserweights. And so, you know, not to get too far ahead, but that's why I was expecting the cruiserweight division to go over to SmackDown. And unfortunately, that was not the case. So I am very curious what they're going to do on Raw with the cruiserweights, because I felt like Nitro used them incredibly well, and they had 3 hours to fill. And there was always, you know, one or two cruiserweight matches, but they were good, and they were exciting, and they just did their flippy stuff. But people liked it, you know, myself included. And that's how I came to love so many of them. And with WWE, it just feels like they're toning them down way too much. And so it just feels like it's a WWE style, but with smaller guys. And that's not what I want to see. I want to see, you know, a different style. I want to see like Lucha Libre. I want to see, you know, a little bit of Japanese influence in there. I want to see a very different style for them than what I'm seeing with Roman Reigns and Rusev, because that's a very different style. And unfortunately, WWE is not doing that. So hopefully this hour-long show, we'll be able to showcase that, and it'll be a much better product overall.
I believe that they'll do a good job of it, just as long as certain people are involved. I hope that it's Ryan Ward. I hope that he's the one that writes it, because if he's the one who's writing it, then I believe that it'll be a really tight show, because he's going to work SmackDown, and then he's going to do his hour-long 205 Live. So I'm looking forward to it. Unfortunately, I think I'm going to miss the first episode, which kind of stinks, but oh well. But anyways, let's talk Survivor Series, because this just happened. So Raw versus SmackDown, the women's match. Aaron, did you think that they did a good job in this match? Or do you think that maybe they might have, to me, it felt too fast and too weird, if that makes sense.
Actually, you know, I had the opposite reaction. I kind of felt that it was almost a little slow. You know, they did a lot of stuff in there that it just felt like it dragged on a little bit. And, you know, we'll talk about a little bit more when we get into the tag team and men's matches, because those were also quite long. This one, I thought that they hit a lot of the spots that they needed to. They showed off Nia Jax as being this monster heel, which is what they were trying to do, this, you know, a behemoth of a woman, and they did that, and I felt they did a very good job of that. They showcased Charlotte and all the stuff that she needed to do. One person that really got, I think, didn't get as much attention was Sasha. You know, I think she was one of the first ones eliminated too, so it was kind of a weird spot for her. You know, the fact that they got rid of her so quickly. And the Raw women's was stacked when you compare them to the SmackDown women's, really. You have Becky Lynch, Natalya is a good worker, and then you have, you know, maybe Alexa Bliss at that point in time. You know, they're trying to build her up. But, you know, after that, it's kind of like, well, you know, who's the rest of them?
I have a problem actually with this, because how come Natalya wasn't already in the match? That's what I didn't understand.
Because she lost a qualifying match is what happened. And
the
so
only qualifying match for SmackDown.
All right. That's right.
Yeah. So, I mean, but either way, it still was kind of like, eh, what's, you know, I don't know. To be honest, the match itself was okay. It was passable. It's better than the women's matches they've done in the past. I remember seeing I think a Survivor Series women's match. And I want to say, like, no joke, it was like 3 minutes long by the time that everybody was eliminated. It was terrible, you know, but that's what they did with the Divas. And this, on the other hand, they actually gave them time and they allowed them to, you know, do what, you know, put in all their spots and everything. And I think the match itself, what was it? It was almost 20 minutes long. So, a lot better than what they've done in the past.
I think I kind of echo Aaron's sentiments in that the match was passable. It's certainly better than the old Divas matches where everybody was getting pinned within 40 seconds. I think this was a missed opportunity, however. When we did our predictions, I said SmackDown women should go over. And the reason for that is that that division is not only deeper, but I think could have benefited more from being established. And I think you had something interesting in the idea that Charlotte, being, you know, the very dominant champion on pay-per-view, could have easily done something where she chop-blocked Bayley from behind to eliminate her and said, you know what, I'm the queen, I'm the champion, and walk out. You didn't have to have her take the fall, but you could have still done something interesting to set up their feud down the road. Raw's already got us established four. This match didn't do anything to make Raw look better as far as the women's division. But you could have done something to make Becky look stronger, or let Alexa and Carmella be the sole survivors. And now you've got those two. They look really strong because they came out in a 10-woman Survivor Series match. Instead, it's just, oh, look, Charlotte wins again. Yeah, Bayley stands tall, but then she got beat down at the end. So it's kind of like, whoop-de-doo. Becky, you know, fighting spirit, she was down 2-on-1, but missed opportunity. Survivor Series is interesting because about the things that we can't predict between the teams and the dynamic. And I just, you know, I thought this was the perfect match to do it in, and they didn't. And I don't think they did it in any of the matches, to my knowledge.
I was going to say, you know, a lot of my thought process changed as soon as they took Nikki Bella out of this match. Just because, I mean, I went into thinking there's no way that they let, I mean, Nikki Bella not win this match. And they did what they had to do to protect Nikki Bella, is take her out before the match so that Charlotte and Bayley could win it and continue their feud. I think they did a good job with Nia Jax, making her look dominant and making her look strong. But the only thing they really, I think, accomplished is they made all the women on SmackDown look weak.
I'll agree with that, actually. The other thing that I thought was interesting is, what was the point of Dolph Ziggler dropping the title to Miz and then have Miz wrestle Sami Zayn? I just didn't understand that part. Because it almost seemed like it was a SmackDown match. Like, it's something that should have been on TV, not a pay-per-view. And I think that this was a missed opportunity. I mean, what were your thoughts on that, Aaron?
Yeah, so, you know, I totally agree. I think that it was something where when they took the title off of Miz, at that point in time, I was definitely thinking, you know what? There's no way now that the title stays on SmackDown, because, you know, if Miz is going to, if they're going to drop the title to Zayn, they could have Miz do it. And that way, you know, Brian could come out and you know, be like, look, this, there's a reason why I didn't put you on the team, and here's why. And then they could build more tension between them. Ziggler could come out and have some beef, and they could have done the reverse too. Had Ziggler, you know, lost the title to Zayn, then Miz could have came out and said, look, you know, you weren't a real champion. There's no reason you should have had that title. I actually think the title going to Raw would have been a good idea, and then they could have swapped the title back at Royal Rumble or WrestleMania. I would have been okay with that. But it just seemed kind of weird. Like, what was the point then of Miz dropping the title to Ziggler only to win it back, you know, 30 days later? It just didn't make a whole lot of sense. I just felt like this was a huge missed opportunity here. Either keep it on Ziggler or move the title to Raw.
This is where I'm going to say, if I was booking this, I liked my original prediction in this one, in which Ziggler is going into this match. You had Ziggler versus Sami Zayn, but Ruru beats up Sami Zayn in the back to take the open challenge, because it still was an open challenge. So I would have liked to seen that better. And then he had Rusev take the title. You have Miz complain to a point where he then gets maybe the opportunity at, like Aaron said, at Royal Rumble to face off against Rusev to try to bring the title back. But you know, I think there were a lot of missed opportunities in this pay-per-view, and this was one of them. But you know what? I liked the finish. I thought that was pretty neat. Something new. So, but again, I think this is another thing, and we're going to see this theme go out throughout all the matches. I think it made SmackDown look weak.
Going in, I thought it was weird in the first place to have Zayn versus Ziggler, so I really wouldn't have done this match in the first place. But there was an opportunity, and of course another missed opportunity. I feel like that's going to be the theme of our show. The moment they decided to take Corbin out, why don't you insert Miz into the main event instead of Shane McMahon? And then when he turns on the SmackDown team and, you know, hits a skull-crushing finale on Ambrose or something like that, then you have them continue the feud where he just walks out, you know, do something to show that he's selfish. For all I care, let him take a payoff for Stephanie McMahon. He hits the skull-crushing finale. He walks up to the stage. Stephanie hands him a briefcase, and Miz goes, all I care about is the money, and the money you won't give me for my contract, I just got from Stephanie. Problem solved. I mean, you know, decent finish, okay match. To me, the crowd would have been more hot for Ziggler-Zayn because it would have been a dual face chant. You were in Canada, so you know Zayn would have got the better chance, but they respect Ziggler. This was a match that could have been seen on Raw or SmackDown. This wasn't a special match. This wasn't needed. I thought the idea of swapping the IC title over for a little bit could have been interesting. Seeing Raw or SmackDown get a little bit desperate to get one of the titles. Maybe they challenged for the US and the IC at a Royal Rumble to try to get one. You know, there's something they could have done instead. What was the point of Ziggler winning? That whole big buildup for that great career-threatening match, and then you just kind of gave it away on a SmackDown. It's, you know, it's kind of the classic WWE thing, right? They're very good at building us up when they do a good story, but there's never a plan after the ending. It's just like they get to that point, and then I have no idea where they're going afterwards, and neither do they. So, you know, it's week-to-week booking.
Yeah, like you said, missed opportunity so far. And I think also, with the Raw and SmackDown tag teams, they had, you know, the big, you know, basically 10-on-10 or 11-on-10 match, which, you know, what were your thoughts on the whole match, Roger? Because to me, I thought they did a better job on this one, but it also seemed like there's too much going on, if that makes sense.
Well, when you have 20 people in a match, you have too much going on. Like, by default, it's a cluster. I didn't care about this match going in, to be quite honest. This was one where I think you could have pared it down. This should have been three teams against three teams, maybe four teams against four teams. But the match, again, it was okay. It was passable. It was a very strange finish. To me, I don't see Cesaro and Sheamus as some sort of long-term tag team. I don't understand why you gave them the rub. I also don't get why New Day was eliminated immediately. These are one of the longest reigning champions of all time, and you treated them kind of like a joke, but... You know, I guess this was their idea of a shocking moment, but I don't know. This is one of those things we won't be talking about in 2 weeks or 3 weeks or a month. It's just blah.
Yeah, it was totally, I felt the same way. It was a throwaway match. And, you know, taking a look at some of the eliminations, the way that they happen, I was very surprised that they had Cesaro and Sheamus be the sole survivors. It didn't, I don't know what the purpose here is. Maybe they can say, hey, you know, we were the sole survivor, so now we want a shot at the titles. And maybe they do that for Roadblock. That might not be a bad idea. But at the end of the day, what did this do? Like, who did it help out? You know, what teams actually got a boost from it other than Cesaro and Sheamus? You know, they could have helped American Alpha out. They could have helped out Gallows and Anderson a little bit more. You know, those are two teams that really could have used the rub.
But Enzo and Cass?
Yeah. Enzo and Cass, though, are still, like, they're already over. They could have used that extra boost, but I think that they're probably saving them for maybe like WrestleMania, where they would get a shot at the titles and they could get a big win there. But there are teams that could have gotten a boost now, where going into the next pay-per-view, it would have been like, wow, you know, we can't wait to see them. And I felt like this one, they really missed an opportunity. And I thought that the women's match was actually, I enjoyed the women's match more than the tag team.
Wait, Aaron, so you're saying that New Day is going to keep the titles until WrestleMania?
They'll keep the titles till at least Royal Rumble, in my opinion.
All right. Doug, what were your thoughts on the tag team Survivor Series match?
I think it was a it was very, very fast off the bat. To begin with the double eliminations, really quick. If you're going to do something like that, I think you should have done something with, you know, Breeze, Fandango. Sure, they left pretty quick. But if you're going to do it to the reverse side, it should have been the Shining Stars. Because they didn't do anything else the rest of the match anyway. They didn't really contribute to big bumps or big flies or anything like that. So I think you should have eliminated them real quick. Then you have a little bit less clutter, which it was good. But I don't know. I got a little lost in this one. It took a little too long. And also, there was a lot of confusion when you had a bunch of people jumping to the outside of who was even the legal team or who was the legal person in. And then I just didn't care. So the match went long and it eventually ended. And I was very happy that it ended.
The other thing that I was shocked about, too, that happened tonight was that the Cruiserweight match happened, but then nothing happened, though, technically, because Baron Corbin comes in and then basically gets the match thrown out. So what was the whole point of basically putting this on the line? I mean, Aaron, what do you think?
Well, Baron Corbin and Kalisto definitely had their differences, and so you know, it made sense for that to happen, I guess, from a storyline standpoint. I go back to what I said earlier, where I think the Cruiserweights would have been better on SmackDown. But if we're dissecting this a little bit more, Brian Kendrick doesn't have anywhere else to go from here. So they have to start something anew on 205 Live. They have to have something for him. You know, he can't go back to TJ Perkins. They got to have another contender that'll make that worthwhile. Kalisto and Corbin, I'll be honest, I don't really care about these two. I think that Corbin, you know, could do a lot better because this is just going to be a David versus Goliath type storyline. And I really don't care about those unless they're people who are actually, you know, like worthwhile competitors. Like, I don't believe at all that Kalisto could beat Corbin. I just don't believe that. There's no, like, you know, it's like Rey Mysterio versus Kevin Nash back in the day. It's like, no, that's not going to happen. I'm sorry. You know, it's very similar here. Kalisto should be in the Cruiserweights. That's what he should be doing. And Corbin should be taking on somebody like a Apollo Crews or Jack Swagger. Those are the type of people that he should be taking on to help elevate him. You know, this whole thing I felt was just kind of a waste. You know, I the match itself was okay, but everything else that happened because of that now is kind of, you know, a moot point.
I think this would have been a great time if you wanted to continue a feud. You have Sin Cara come down to help Kalisto out and maybe does something to help, you know, by hitting Brian Kendrick with the ref's back turn to even not necessarily let Kalisto win, but it would at least help make a little bit more sense to continue a feud with Brian Kendrick on Raw. I don't know where exactly you go right now with Brian Kendrick because there is nobody else to fight. TJP is, you know, we saw that feud. It didn't work out very well. So who else are you going to have? Like Aaron said, though, with Baron Corbin taking on Kalisto, it's a non-factor. We've all seen this David Goliath story before. I believe it was when Rusev took the U.S. title from Kalisto, and I think that's where you need to end it. You bring Kalisto over to Raw to make him part of the Cruiserweight matches, and that's where he can have his title. He can sell his merch, be a champion on the Cruiserweight scene, which would have been better if he would have won and brought it all down to SmackDown.
Roger, do you think that they just don't have a direction right now to go with the Cruiserweights? That's why this just happened?
Oh, absolutely. I don't think they've had a direction for the Cruiserweights from the moment the CWC ended. Part of it, I suspect, is that they were booking on building it around Ibushi or Zack Sabre Jr., and they kind of got stuck with TJP. So I think they were just a little bit taken aback. Another thing I would say is, again, to kind of harp on our theme of missed opportunities, you had Kendrick basically kind of cheat TJP out of the storyline, out of the title. What a better way for TJP to get revenge by coming in, interfering in the match, helping Kalisto win, send the division over to SmackDown. And now when 205 Live begins, you have a new champion. He could have feuded with Neville or somebody else. Now TJP and Kendrick could have had their third match and more of a blood feud, an actual feud away from the championship where each one of them feels like they were cheated out of something. Now you have storylines for 205 Live. You could have done a Fatal 4-Way match down the road with whoever the next challenger is. Something to build it. Now, I just don't care. Like, this is just... Kendrick's a champion on Raw. A bunch of matches we won't care about. I like Rich Swann a lot, but I hate him on Raw. I want him on NXT. I want him on 205 Live. All of these guys with talent on Raw, they're just lost. And Raw's a boring show. And unfortunately, these guys are boring on Raw. That crowd doesn't care about them.
It's not just Rich Swann. It's Cedric Alexander's like my favorite. I think it's his song that he comes out to.
Well, Cedric Alexander is probably the best competitor, I think, for the cruiserweights right now.
But
are we not counting Neville? I would say Neville's better than Alexander.
Well, they haven't used Neville as a cruiserweight, though, have they? Like, I haven't seen him in like one of those matches.
I haven't, but I suspect. I mean, they're not doing anything else with him, so I suspect that he's got to be part of this division, right? You would assume so, because like Kalisto was before, and then they just threw him in. So, because Neville to me would be the face of that division. I don't know if he's under the 205 limit either, to be fair.
Neville should be. I mean, Tony Nese is. He has a very similar body type.
Yeah. So I guess Neville probably is. He's close enough.
He's 194 to get to be completely right on point. Sami Zayn is 212, so he's only 7 pounds away. So. And Finn Balor.
Yeah, but Sami Zayn has at least enough of a storyline buildup that he doesn't need to be in the cruiserweights.
He doesn't need to be on Raw. He just needs to go to SmackDown so he can shine.
Right.
So let's talk about the Raw versus SmackDown men. Doug, do you think that this was done properly? Because it seemed like it went forever. I'm guessing 40 minutes.
If 52.
Not 52. Okay. So 52 minutes this match went on. And I thought this one was really good. This one I was really happy with when it was done. What were your thoughts on it, Doug?
Well, I think this match, or at least when the entrances started, was 8 o'clock. So from curtain to curtain, it was over an hour long. And you kind of needed that to, especially if you're going to have this 4-hour Survivor Series, which I think was a little long. But I think this was an overall good match. I think there was a lot of, you didn't have that real quick pin to start off anything. There's a lot of good key moments in here. One of the things I think I saw on Reddit, which I give this guy all the credit in the world, but I have a question for everybody. If Roman Reigns forgives Seth Rollins for all the stuff that he's done in the past, does that make the big dog man's best friend or man's best friend the man's?
Wow.
Best friend.
The man's best friend, yeah.
Okay, that's good.
That was good. Very good. Again, that goes out to whoever it was that said it on Reddit. But I was laughing pretty hard after I read that one. But I think overall it was a great match. There were some good spots. The Shield got back together. You know, it was a nice idea, but I think you did it at the wrong time because even the crowd booed.
Well, they booed Roman in all fairness. So,
yes, they are. Go ahead, Roger.
Well, so that's what Doug's point is, though, right? The Shield includes Roman. In that case, you can't say they just booed Roman. They booed the fact that Rollins and Ambrose, despite the fact that Rollins is one of the most over guys in the company and Ambrose is still one of your top babyfaces, the idea of them joining back up with Roman Reigns was still so disgusting to the crowd that they would boo all three of them instead of cheer for two of the three of them. That ought to tell you how not over Roman Reigns is with the crowd. So that little Shield reunion is a failure because they still didn't like it.
And then they were cheering for SmackDown when Roman Reigns was the only person left.
Or actually, when it was 2-on-2, I recall the crowd specifically chanting, please eliminate Roman, because they wanted to see the other three guys in the match, but they didn't want Roman to be a part of it. Like, that crowd hated Roman Reigns with a passion, and I don't blame them. He did nothing in the match to make them not hate him.
But there was a point, though, in the match that I think we were all scared, because it got to the point where it was Roman. Was it Roman and Seth that was left? And I think there was four guys from SmackDown. And we're like, great, what's going to happen, of course, is Roman's going to eliminate all but one of them. And he's going to look so strong.
Gotta make him look strong.
What are your thoughts, Eric?
Gotta make
Yeah, so this, I think that the match is probably about 10 minutes too long. I think if I would have shaved anything, there's probably about 10 minutes worth I would have shaved off, made it a 40-minute match. But I think they hit all the spots that they needed to, you know? And there wasn't an elimination for 16 minutes into the match. And that was Ambrose, surprisingly enough, was the first one that got eliminated. I wasn't really expecting that. But they did a very good job of the storytelling that was going on in there. It really was nice to see some people sizing each other up that we haven't seen on a regular, not only just on a regular basis, but maybe even ever. You know, when I saw AJ and Jericho in there, I actually got a little giddy, even though that they had a nice 3-month-long, 4-month-long feud that they had, which was a little overdone. We got to see them again, and this time it was a little bit fresher. You know, AJ and Kevin Owens was pretty nice to see. AJ and Seth Rollins, you know, that was one that we didn't get to see either. So to have the separate brands, that actually makes it more unique and more ideal, and I think that's what they wanted to do with a Raw versus a SmackDown. But overall, I think that this was probably best match of the night. It was one of the best Survivor Series matches I've ever seen, you know, at least definitely in recent memory. I felt like everyone in there was a superstar, even though like Braun Strowman is relatively new. They obviously have been, you know, grooming him to be a really big guy, but they've been doing a very good job. And, you know, if you look back on previous Survivor Series matches, there's always like three people in there who are like, oh yeah, those three are getting eliminated right away. You know, like, you know, Ron Killings is in this one. All right, he's first to go, you know, that sort of thing. This one, I couldn't have told you, you know, who would have gotten eliminated first. So, definitely a match of the night. One of the best matches. One of the best Survivor Series matches I've seen in recent memory. And, you know, I hope that they continue this for next year.
And now I was going to ask one quick question. Was AJ Styles, did for some reason, like Gallows and Anderson, did they ever interact at all?
They did not. No, at least not that I saw.
Only in mention of the other person's name in the back when they were talking to Ellsworth.
Okay.
One thing I was going to ask about this, and kind of a question on three of you. Did you feel Shane needed to be in this match? And I say this as someone who likes Shane McMahon a lot, but I personally felt that he looked out of place in this type of match, and it seemed forced as opposed to necessary. Like if Baron Corbin had been injured on the night of, and you could make the argument, of course, that like we don't have anybody left, and Daniel Bryan looks in Shane and says, you got to be my fifth guy, you could understand that. But with a couple weeks to prepare, why did you pick your part-time commissioner, general manager? I don't know what he is, but he's one of the authority figures. He's 50 years old. He hasn't wrestled since WrestleMania. What does that say about your roster that you don't trust anybody else over a non – it's not like he's Triple H, right, who despite the fact that he's a part-timer is a legend, or The Rock or Brock Lesnar. You picked Shane over The Miz, over Dolph Ziggler. And granted, I mean, Ziggler didn't have a match anymore. Why didn't you put Ziggler in this match? Why didn't you put Apollo Crews in this match? Why didn't you put Jack Swagger in this match? Like, something about Shane just didn't seem to fit. And he did a good job. I don't think he dragged the match down by any means. I just thought that you had a better opportunity to elevate somebody else with all this star power than elevating Shane McMahon yet again, because we already know what Shane's capable of. He doesn't need any more hype. I just felt like, again, missed opportunity.
And I think that was also thrown together real fast, because didn't they announce it just, the week before? That he was going to be in the match?
2 weeks.
2 weeks?
Yeah.
You would think there would be a bigger buildup for it, but apparently not. What do you think about what Roger said, Aaron?
Well, no, I totally agree. You know, I would have put Ziggler in this match. You know, at the moment that Ziggler lost the title, I would have put him in the match. You know, I felt that Shane was unnecessary in this, and, you know, other than the two spots that he did, you know, that's all that you'll, you know, kind of remember, which maybe that's what they're hoping for, is that you'll remember him taking that big spear, or, you know, jumping off the turnbuckle into the table.
Doug, do you think he got hurt on that spear?
I definitely think he got hurt. If you watched it and watch how hard his head whiplashes into the mat, it's pretty bad. And you just, even when you look at his eyes, when they counted the 1-2, and I think the referee should have just counted the 3 anyway, even though, yes, his shoulder went up, but I'm pretty sure that's where he was supposed to be eliminated anyway. And that was, I mean, he did that not even knowing what he was doing. He was probably just trying to roll over. He is definitely hurt. You noticed all the other wrestlers quickly went to the opposite side of the ring and started fighting out there to try to draw attention away from the fact that Shane was being rolled out of the ring. And and that's why he didn't need to be in there. To answer Roger's question, he did not need to be there. You're SmackDown. You have where's your John Cena? The Undertaker just came back and he said that he's ready to go. If he's Team SmackDown, why isn't he on your roster? There are so many other people that could have been there. The Miz should have been there, I think, and not even had the title. There were so many other people that should have taken that spot. Shane did not need to be there. Let's go back to when they actually split everything up, and Shane and Daniel Bryan said that they weren't going to be influences in SmackDown. They were just going to be kind of like backstage, you know, behind the scenes kind of stuff, and let the wrestlers wrestle. Well, you're not doing that when you put Shane out there to wrestle. This is a non-factor, and it should have remained a non-factor, but now it looks like Shane really is going to be backstage and not doing anything because he's going to be out for a while.
One more question. 2 years ago, when Sting made his debut, wasn't it Ziggler who was the sole survivor in that match? Mm-hmm. When he put the Authority out? So, like, doesn't he make the most sense to be your fifth guy? And you have Randy Orton, who's probably the king of Survivor Series, and then you had Dolph Ziggler, another guy who's won a Survivor Series match, down 3-1. Like, duh. Shane's never been in a Survivor Series match that he's won. I mean, when he was in was the winner-take-all that the Alliance lost. So, I mean, Ziggler or The Undertaker, just because it's The Undertaker, or John Cena, like, just like Doug said, there's something about that was off.
I forgot about that last year. You know,
2 years.
Well, 2 years. But the thing, I guess, that I'm always curious about is why don't they just... I'm wondering if some of the writers were like, this makes sense, or like, what was like, this is how the original plan, this is where they went, because I'm confused on a lot of this stuff. I think that this is the most confusing pay-per-view, and it comes down to also the main event, which was at like 9:25 or 9:20 Central Time. And I'm like, okay, so maybe they'll go 15 minutes. Aaron, how long was the match?
What was it, minute 28, I think, is what it was.
So, and we're talking about Goldberg Lesnar. So I can't believe this. Like, I cannot believe that they brought Goldberg back for this. What was the real point? Because all he did was he went out there, did a job. He was completely blown up at that time. And it would have been funny if the match was supposed to go 3 minutes and then he was too blown up. They're like, nope, can't do it. We're done. 3 spears, jackhammer, and that's it. I mean, that's all the match was. It was a joke.
But I'm kind of curious if the fact that Goldberg was injured on Raw before Survivor Series, his shoulder, that the only thing he really could do is a couple spears and the jackhammer, and that's the only thing he could take. Like, this was, when it came out that he was injured, you knew that this match was either going to be really, really short, or there was going to be a run-in, and, you know, or something. And I think that this would have been the perfect time if to use Shane in this capacity of to get a little bit of revenge on Lesnar. You just, like, the match starts, you hear, here comes the money. Shane comes out, dances at the top. Lesnar gets speared again, and then jackhammered. That would make sense because it throws Lesnar completely off the game, and or something like that, and you set up a Lesnar, whoever he's going to fight next. Goldberg said in one of his interviews that he's going to come back as Goldberg the character, which, you know what? That's all he was involved in was squash matches. This was just that. That's what it was. It was a squash match. And it made Goldberg obviously look strong and come back, and everybody's happy. But it also gives me that wonder if they're not going to do one more match, Goldberg-Lesnar.
So I was reading that Goldberg actually signed a multi-match deal with WWE. So I guess we will see him maybe in a couple other matches. I agree with you, Doug. I think that we will see Goldberg Lesnar 3 probably at WrestleMania would be my guess. I think that the buys for this were a lot higher. I saw on my Facebook a few people who, you know, are acquaintances who said, oh, Goldberg is fighting again and he's taking on Brock Lesnar. It looks like I'll have to get back into wrestling. And that's what WWE was going for. They were going for that crowd. They're going for people who remember Bill Goldberg and they're like, hey, you know what? Hey, remember Goldberg? I remember Goldberg. Oh, man.
Yeah, Goldberg. Yeah, Jackhammer. I remember.
Spears? Remember Jackhammers? I remember Jackhammers. And that's what they were going for, and I think that they got it. And to see this match, to see how Lesnar was dominant over everybody for so long, and to have, you know, this guy come out and take down the bully, and the strangest of all, because we all picked Lesnar to win this, but the strangest thing of all is that Goldberg...
Hold on. Not all of us picked Lesnar to win this. I did pick Goldberg.
Did you? Yes. You know, I thought that you picked Lesnar. My bad.
I picked Goldberg, but it was because of a distraction.
So when you think about it, Goldberg is 100% WCW creation. He is completely created by WCW. And Vince McMahon hates WCW. And he allowed one of his creations, you know, which... Granted, he went to MMA, but for the most part, Lesnar is Vince McMahon's creation. He allowed Goldberg to defeat Lesnar. WCW defeat WWE. That is like unheard of, in my opinion.
You forgot about his great NFL career that he had for the Vikings.
But Goldberg was in the NFL too.
Yeah, for the Rams and the Falcons. Yeah.
Oh, nice. But yeah, what were your thoughts on the match, Roger?
Well, for one, I feel like anything that's under 90 seconds can't be referred to as a match. That is, I mean, how many entrances are even 90 seconds short, right? That was...
The Undertaker couldn't even get out to the ring in time.
No, the Undertaker's on the stage next to his pyro at 90 seconds, so... this was dumb. Like, look, there is a certain section of the fan base, as Aaron alluded to, the casuals, not to come off as elitist... probably enjoyed seeing Goldberg again and probably enjoyed seeing this match of two spears and a jackhammer. Not to sound super hipsterish, but I never liked Goldberg all that much in the first place. Like, I disliked Goldberg before disliking Goldberg was cool. Not because I think he was bad, not because it wasn't fun, but after a while, what, 170 plus spears and a jackhammer, the only match I ever liked of his was him and DDP. All his other matches were kind of dumb. Goldberg was also a ray of hope, I think, for a lot of people when the NWO was just running wild, where everything was just so dominant that he was the only guy in WCW that didn't look like a complete joke. So it was cool to see him finally spear and jackhammer Hogan. But we fast forward 12 years. I just don't care about Goldberg enough to see him spear and destroy Brock Lesnar. Like, look, I'm glad that Lesnar got knocked down a bit of a peg so that it's more believable that somebody could beat him. The problem is that this doesn't accomplish that. This just says that, like, if Lesnar is S tier, Goldberg is S plus 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 tier because he just destroyed the guy who destroys everybody else in the roster. So nothing has changed. Brock Lesnar still beats the crap out of everybody else except for Roman Reigns and Goldberg. So if you do a spear for a finisher, you're fine against Lesnar. Everybody else is going to get destroyed. The match wasn't good. If I paid $50 or whatever it cost to buy a pay-per-view to foresee this match, this was a Tyson fight. Like, this was stupid. I don't see going forward what have you accomplished with this? Okay, Goldberg wrestles again. If he beats Undertaker, big deal. Lesnar already broke the streak. If he fights The Rock, he's already beaten The Rock before. Like, what matchups are there for Goldberg? Goldberg and Austin's the only matchup I still want to see of Goldberg. And Austin's not coming out of retirement. So I don't see what you do with Goldberg going forward that would provide any interest.
You don't think Goldberg versus Undertaker would be something of interest?
I mean, for one, Goldberg, like you said, was blown up within 90 seconds. So what can he really do with The Undertaker that's going to be interesting?
He could spear him, and Undertaker could be wearing a steel plate.
You know what? Say what you will, I like that spot. I thought that spot was really well done.
I did too, except for I think that Brett laid there a little bit too long. But it was interesting.
I want to know why Big Papa Pump wasn't invited to this match. I think Goldberg was afraid of Scott Steiner because he knows that he has no chance against the Big Bad Booty Daddy. That's what I think.
Well, I think there is a mathematical chance, but what would that mathematical equation be?
I believe it's 8 1/3 chance of winning. Oh, okay. This is what it ends up being after you subtract everything from there.
Cinco Goldberg had no chance. None.
Sure. So Roger, I'm going to take the contrarian view here because I actually I liked Goldberg back in the day. You know, it was really exciting to go see him and watch him wrestle. You know, and his matches were exactly as you expected it to be. It was about the entrance. He came out. The matches were 60 seconds long. And that was it. You know, he did not put on, you know, 10-minute classics, you know, or 20-minute
classics. His walk to the ring was longer than the match.
Exactly. It really was. And he got paid handsomely for it, and people bought his merchandise for it. You know, we have a friend that had a flag in his room of Goldberg, you know. He was a phenomenon, you know, and he wasn't Stone Cold. Stone Cold could wrestle, you know. He was just a guy who went out, and he did some moves, and that was it. I was happy to see Goldberg, and it was pretty exciting. I didn't, and if I'm booking this, I still wouldn't have had Goldberg win. I think that was a mistake. And yes, he was blown up, and so you know him and Taker wouldn't put on a classic unless you know Goldberg got some you know wrestling lessons between now and I don't know WrestleMania or you know whatever the next big pay per view after that would be. But I expect Goldberg to be around for a little bit longer. Matches that he'll probably wrestle. He'll probably have a throwaway match with like Kane or like Big Show, I would think.
Rusev?
If I'm thinking about like, you know, they'll have one of those throwaway matches. It's like, hey, you get to see Goldberg against Kane. He's obviously going to beat Kane. But then it'll be like the next one will be Goldberg versus Taker, where you're like, oh, this is a big match. Who's going to win? Or Goldberg versus Lesnar 3. Who's going to win that one? You know, that sort of thing. So I don't know how many matches he signed on for. I would imagine it's probably like 6 or so. You know, he comes like every other pay-per-view and it's a big deal then. But, you know, I actually like seeing Goldberg. And I thought it was a treat to see him. But at the end of the day, you know, there could have been somebody else in that spot if they wanted to build somebody else up to that level.
I'm going
to
call it right now at WrestleMania. The main event will be Goldberg versus Triple H.
Random Goldberg title. Second. For the Universal and the World Heavyweight Championship.
And the U.S. and Intercontinental. They're just going to combine them all.
So random Goldberg fact that I'm pretty sure is true. I mean, my trivia knowledge has proven to be pretty decent. I don't think Goldberg in WWE has lost a one-on-one match. I think he is undefeated. So the guy who's known for the undefeated streak, kind of going what Aaron said, has still never been pinned in a singles match in WWE, which is like completely opposite of everything Vince McMahon has. Like he buried Sting on night one in his debut, but Goldberg of all people gets to be treated like the greatest god I've ever seen. Like it just tells you that Goldberg size matters to Vince more than company loyalty. That tells you what he cares about the most.
Well, Goldberg never went to that independent TNA.
Well, I would say that for Vince, it's probably the money. And I imagine that Goldberg got him quite a bit of money. And, you know, we got to see Goldberg and Rock. We got to see, you know, Goldberg versus Triple H for a while. And then obviously it ended with Goldberg and Lesnar. And I'm sure that, you know, Vince was just more about like, look, I get to print shirt with his stupid little tattoo on there and I get to make money off of it. And I'm sure he made a ton of money from him.
He made my $10.
Wow.
Or $9.99.
Roger, I think you're right. I'm going through all these so far. There's not been a time that there hasn't been someone else in the match or Royal Rumble. So, wow. I did not realize that.
His only pinfall defeat, I think, is the Elimination Chamber where Hunter hit him with the sledgehammer at SummerSlam.
Right.
I don't think he took a fall other than that. And that was a sledgehammer and a pedigree, I think. And it was a 6-man match.
Goldberg and Maven defeat Randy Orton, Triple H. Oh,
Goldberg was with Maven? Oh, my God.
And by the way, he's still through a rumble. I should actually buy that domain one of these days. But so we've been going on this long rant. So, Aaron, with Survivor Series, did this really make SmackDown look weak? And do you think they did that on purpose because maybe SmackDown is starting to look a lot better than Raw?
So I don't know if I would say it made SmackDown look weak, and I'm probably going to be the contrarian here. You know, SmackDown won two of the matches. Raw won three of them. You know, somebody was going to win, somebody was going to lose. And I, taking a look at how it was set up, I really felt that Raw was going to get the push for two of them, and SmackDown was only going to get one. I'm glad SmackDown won the men's match. I think that it was able to showcase the people in the right manner. You know, we're going to see something now with the Wyatts and with Orton. We're going to kind of see something come to fruition there. But I don't know if it made SmackDown look necessarily weak. But I think that there probably could have been another match on there where they could have done another interpromotional match. You know, where was Rusev at? You know, Rusev could have been in the 5-on-5 match, and then you have Roman Reigns defend his title against somebody on SmackDown. Could have done something like that. But I don't know. I don't think it necessarily made SmackDown look weak. I just think that but I don't think it made Raw look strong either.
I would actually, I completely disagree. Fun fact.
And why do you disagree?
Because of fun facts.
Fun fact. Let's just get to this one. So Goldberg has lost 5 times in WWE out of his 55 matches. Wow. He's had 4 draws as well, or no contests. So, yeah. So he basically can pick when he wants to win and lose, which is interesting. But yeah, Doug, what are your thoughts?
I'll disagree. I think it made SmackDown look very weak in the fact that you had to have James Ellsworth hold Braun Strowman down, which is absolutely – I actually liked the spot. I liked what they did there. I thought it was hilarious, especially the after fact. And it also made Ellsworth a good factor, but at the same time very minimal in the actual match itself. I thought he was going to be very distracting and doing a lot of stupid stuff on the outside of the ring the whole time. But this was a good use of him and got rid of him fast. But it also gets rid of Braun Strowman. And then you also had Roman Harper come down. So the SmackDown wins that you have are all by basically cheating and dirty methods. You had Miz win because of Maurice ringing the bell to distract Sami Zayn. So your two wins for SmackDown are thanks to some heelish nature and also some shenanigans. So they can only win if shenanigans are used. I found that just really, really, I don't know, sad.
And what do you think about that, Roger? Do you think that by Raw winning, you know, 3 and SmackDown only getting 2 doesn't make them look weak?
I don't think it's the record. Like Aaron said, somebody had to win, somebody had to lose. But I disagree fully with his point because, like Doug said, it's the way that SmackDown won. And it's not even necessarily the way that SmackDown won in the men's match. It's the way that SmackDown behaved in the men's match that made them look. I mean, going from the selection of picking your general manager over somebody on your roster to the idea that the only reason you could eliminate Braun Strowman was the mascot holding his leg. Now, don't get me wrong. I thought that spot was fantastic. I laughed. It was a great way to destroy him by throwing him off the stage. But again, you didn't beat him. You had him get counted out because Ellsworth, the 6th guy on the team, basically had to hold his foot. Doesn't exactly make you look strong. Then Dean Ambrose, your only good guy, does one of the stupidest things you can imagine and attacks AJ Styles and helps the Raw team triple power bombing. It was just like, wow, the SmackDown men are so stupid that they would rather just fight each other than win the match. Okay, that's one match. Oh, wait a second. They lost the tag team match, so the tag teams on Raw are better. Oh, the women's match. They got beat 5-3. And Charlotte didn't even like Bayley. She beat the crap out of him. So Miz wins because his wife, again, doesn't really make you look strong. Where does SmackDown really look good? Like, if I'm watching this show as a fan who doesn't really know anything backstage, I think Raw's the supremely superior show. This is the NFL facing college, and they stole a victory out of nowhere. I just think this didn't make SmackDown look like an equal. This made them look like Thunder compared to Raw being Nitro. Like, this was a very unbalanced showing, in my opinion. And also, where were SmackDown stars? All of Raw's stars were here, whereas The Undertaker and John Cena were nowhere to be seen.
Yeah, I thought that was weird that Cena was not on the pay-per-view. I was just thinking about that. Why wasn't he in the place of Shane McMahon? Because that would, to me, that would make more sense. But
Or The Undertaker.
Or the yeah, especially because he comes back, then they're gonna go nuts. Especially, oh, there he is. Or if they say, hey, the fifth person isn't here yet, or something like that, then all of a sudden, bam, Undertaker, you know, his music hits, and he's only in there for 20 minutes.
Did Dolph Ziggler even wrestle?
No.
What were the pre-show matches? I know the Kane versus Luke Harper.
It was a cruiserweight 3-on-3.
Oh, okay, so a throwaway match.
So
Dolph Ziggler. Yeah. Nothing.
No Ziggler.
Apollo Crews. Nothing.
No Rusev.
Real Rusev and technically Baron Corbin too. I mean, I think that this is a loss.
He showed up.
He showed up, but he should have been wrestling.
So wait a minute. Baron Corbin interfered in that match, correct?
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's a stupid.
But thing. Who did he hit Kendrick? Yeah.
He hit Kendrick to cost SmackDown. So again, another stupid move by SmackDown. One of their superstars intentionally cost them the Cruiserweight championship.
I bet you that Ward had nothing to do with this. That it just seems like it's someone from Raw that wrote this show. But anyways,
this seems like Vince McMahon's touch, personally speaking.
I think the commentary was also cluttered.
Oh, it was bad. Mm-hmm.
When they first showed the announcers, I was like, wow, this is going to be good. You have Ronaldo, you have Graves. Yeah, JBL's there and Baron Saxon. So, you know, they're going to make fun of Baron Saxon the entire time. I thought it was going to be great. And then they kept switching people. It's like, come on, you don't need four announcers. Two is fine. Three is pushing it and four is stupid. But, you know, what do I know?
Yeah.
But let's talk now. A lot of these feuds that happen, there are some things that happen that are going to lead up to, of course, like the roadblock. Like the Universal title is going to be defended. Kevin Owens versus Roman Reigns. And then there's also going to, of course, we're going to see Seth Rollins versus Chris Jericho. You know, Aaron, is anything like with that, does that like say, oh, I would definitely spend $50 on this pay-per-view?
No, not at all. I think that it really goes to show that as it stands right now, the only time if we were no longer doing the WWE Network, but a pay-per-view model and is, let's just say $50, you know, I would have probably paid $50 for this pay-per-view. You know, I would do it for Royal Rumble and definitely for WrestleMania. Maybe SummerSlam I would have, I don't know, but, you know, I would definitely pay $50 for NXT before I would pay $50 for a Roadblock or a TLC. You know, because there's not going to be a whole lot that's going to go on there. It's going to be more of an extension of Raw or an extension of SmackDown. You know, to see Roman Reigns versus Kevin Owens, it's like, well, this is a match we've kind of seen before. Now the U.S. title is not going to be defended because Roman Reigns is going to take on the Universal Champion, which, you know, I mean, it is what it is. I'm not expecting much from this match, though. It's not a blood feud. This isn't a match that I'm going, oh, I cannot wait to see this. It's a, eh.
Roadblock looks like a normal episode of Monday Night Raw. So far, all right. Dude, we just saw Kevin Owens versus Roman Reigns when Roman had a chance to get into the triple threat. I can't even count how many times Chris Jericho and Seth Rollins have faced off. So, you know, instead of getting a fresh matchup like Seth Rollins versus Rusev, which actually sounds interesting and could be something that you could go 2 to 3 months because we haven't seen that matchup. And that would be a good way of Stephanie going, you don't get a title shot. You get to face an angry Rusev who's mad that he didn't win the U.S. Championship at Hell in a Cell. Why am I getting Seth versus Jericho? Let Jericho face somebody else. Let Jericho go after Sami Zayn. I don't know. Just give me some new matchups. I'm tired of this with Raw. I'm tired of the same old dance partners just facing, you know, one or two guys. You have a big roster. Use them. And it's just, I honestly do not care about Roadblock. Like Aaron said, I would not pay $50 for it. I wouldn't even pay $20 for it. Like, it is just another episode of Monday Night Raw. We know it's Charlotte Bailey. I'm sure that'll be an okay match. I want to see TLC because I'm interested in AJ versus Dean. That actually, despite the fact that they've been feuding for about 3 months, they've kept it fresh with the introduction of Ellsworth. I have no interest in seeing Roadblock so far.
Do you think that with the AJ versus Dean, do you think that's going to change to a ladder match?
Well, isn't it a TLC match?
TLC
match. Oh, it is. Yeah. Okay, all right, right. But yeah, that'll be interesting. Doug, what are your thoughts about the Roadblock and throw in also the TLC pay-per-view in 2 weeks?
Everything they said is right. Raw, I mean, thank God for the network. I'm going to be working both those nights, so you know what? I don't think I'm going to miss it. I don't think I'm going to be rushing home to watch it. I probably will. I'll be getting off shortly about the same time that, as long as it actually goes till 10 o'clock, I should be able to see the end of AJ versus Dean, and that might be something I look for, but other than that, I might not watch them until probably midweek the following weeks.
Unless something big happens, of course. So, anything else we want to talk about? Because I think we'll close the book on WWE for the night. Anything else you want to add, Aaron?
No, but, you know, even still, ever since the brand split, I got to say that SmackDown has been the superior brand in terms of what I'm most looking forward to. And I feel that they've done a superior job with, you know, making the matches and the feuds more memorable. As Roger had said with Dean and AJ, they've been feuding now for 2 months, 3 months now. And it actually still feels fresh because they've introduced additional partners into it. Whereas for Raw, it's kind of the same old crap that we're used to. And 3 hours is way too long. And, you know, I don't know. I'd rather see something fresher and newer. And I'm not getting that with Raw.
And the other thing I want to point out, even though like the feud with Dean and AJ is still going on, I like the fact that the Shield reunited for a moment and then they powerbomb them through the table, because that's going to be something, you know, they're going to talk about on the next two Tuesdays. So it'll be interesting to see where they go from this point. So, anyways, let's thank our sponsor, HostGator. Are you a blogger or podcaster? Or you're just not happy with your web host? You need to check out HostGator.com. You're going to find web hosting made easy and affordable. HostGator offers unlimited disk space, unlimited bandwidth, one-click script installs with a free sample that hands on the best control panel out there. Stop by today and try a free demo, see how easy it is. And if you use special coupon code OFFTHEMARK, you're going to save 25% off your web hosting packages. So what are you going to lose? Check out HostGator.com and take a bite out of your web hosting costs. Also, make sure you check out 686's Off the Mark page and click on the banner at the top to say big on items from WWEShop.com. Let's talk NXT TakeOver Toronto. Aaron, opening match. Were you excited about Bobby Roode's entrance?
Yeah, you know, I'm a really big Bobby Roode fan. The match itself was pretty good. The one thing I would say here is I actually think that Ty Dillinger should have won this match. I think it would help elevate him a lot more than Bobby Roode. I think Bobby Roode is just, you know, it's a good match because, you know, it was his first actual feud. I was almost thinking that they were going to have Bobby Roode then maybe be the next challenger for the NXT title. That might be what the plan is. I'm not sure. But as it stands right now, you know, I think that Bobby Roode is one of their biggest gems over at NXT.
I think the match was very good. I enjoyed it. I mean, I love Bobby Roode's entrance. It was glorious, right? You had a choir come out. It was very Bobby Roode. The one thing, and this will be a common theme, is that the characters are interesting, right? They have motivations. The crowd is invested in them. You know, one of the things I really enjoyed is when they did the dueling punches, they were chanting either Roode or 10. Instead of like the typical booyah, it was Roode, 10. And it was like, you know, it's interesting that despite the fact that Bobby Roode is loved, the crowd was still behind Dillinger. They still wanted him to win because it would have been a cool upset. I think they made the right move. Bobby Roode is a future gem. You don't have him put over Dillinger. Let Dillinger get that big win down the road. He should have beat Almas in the first place anyway, but let him get that win down the road so it's meaningful. Roode is, you know, one of your main event guys. NXT continues to be very solid. Not the greatest, but this was a very good match.
I agree. Bobby Roode's entrance was probably the best entrance of the whole year. That should get entrance of the year if we ever have that as a category. But I could have seen Ty get a roll-up win or some kind of shenanigan win over Bobby Roode and then have Roode just decimate him afterwards. But it really kind of comes down to what do you have Roode do after this? If you're going to continue the Ty Dillinger-Bobby Roode feud, then yes, you have Dillinger do a quick schoolboy roll-up win sometime in the match. But if you're going to elevate Bobby Roode to the main event status, then you definitely have to have him win, which this I think they should do that. I think this is what they're going for. They will be moving up Bobby Roode to that title match. So you kind of had to have him have this solid win over Ty Dillinger. And it was a solid match. It was a great opener because you had your two Canadians going at it in Toronto, got the crowd really into the whole NXT pay-per-view.
I want to point out something also that happened in that match is that every time they did a count, everyone chanted 10, and that continued to Survivor Series. So every time they're like, one, they're like, 10. So, but what did you think about Asuka facing Mickie James? Do you think it was a good match?
It was a good match. I thought it was interesting. You did have that moment where Mickie James was coming off really strong and she was looking like she had Asuka's number and made it actually look like it was somebody who could defeat Asuka. But you did the right thing. You had the one off with Mickie James anyway. You have Asuka win, but it really does. You kind of wonder who Asuka has to face now.
I echo what Doug said. It was a good one-off. You know, I think they did a good job of making Mickie look believable that she could come in and pull the upset, but it was always very clear that it would be an upset, that Asuka was dominant, that, you know, she was in control of the match for the most part. And once she got that Asuka lock in, it was game over. One thing that I'm really enjoying with Asuka's character is that, and it's a very slow build, but she's going from like the super face to kind of shades of gray. She's kind of getting to that point where she's being a little bit more cocky. She's taunting. She's a little mean. Maybe you can even argue that she's going from confident to arrogant, to the point where now she can go from that dominant face champion to I'm the dominant unbeatable champion, where she's a bully. And maybe you continue this where she goes, you know what? I've cleaned out the entire NXT division. I'm undefeated for 2 straight years. I'm out of here. I'm going to wherever I want to go, and I'm going to dominate that division. Because right now they've got her to the point where she's way above the rest of the division. And I think that's a good thing. Mm-hmm. I just, you know, as long as they continue to book her character right, I think they've got something golden with her to move her up.
Yeah, and that's definitely the way that they've been building her. I don't think anyone expected Mickie James to win. But the question here is, you know, who is next for Asuka? Because you have to have somebody, you know, lined up and ready to go. And I don't really see anyone. I know that they've been, you know, kind of pushing Ember Moon, who I think would be okay. But I see her as a transitional feud. I don't see her as somebody who would take the title off of her. And I agree with Roger's point. That's probably the route that they should go with Asuka. I actually was taking a look, and I believe Asuka has the best win-loss record percentage-wise of any female. And she is, I think, second or third for overall in the entire wrestling world, like even like going way, way, way back. So obviously she, you know, she's somebody that WWE has a lot of stock in. And I think that she could do wonders up on the main roster.
Because I have a dream opponent for this. Who do you three think they should bring in next to fight Asuka?
Velvet Sky.
Oh.
What I think they should have done is had Asuka not only just defeat Mickie James, but she should have been the replacement for Nikki Bella and come out and been in the Survivor Series match. That's who I think should have been next for her. She should have came out. And then you can test the crowd, too, to see how the crowd reacts to her and how she does with everybody out there. You could have her, I don't know, take a pinfall or do something in there just after getting completely beat by somebody. Or you could have had her win it or been a part of the team that won it. That's what I would have done next, because I really don't know who is truly next for her, because you have built her up almost to that Brock Lesnar level, at least for NXT purposes. You have to move her up. There's no one else that you really can bring in. There's nobody in NXT that can challenge her, unless the other thing I would love to see is both the Australian girls that are heels do a 2-on-1 for the title. And they beat her to share, kind of like the what was the tag team
Lay Cool.
Yeah, Lay Cool. Kind of do a Lay Cool thing and then move Asuka up, and you can keep the belt on an NXT person.
Aaron?
You know, I would say probably Awesome Kong. That would be the best one. You know, that'd be somebody that you could say, oh yeah, you know, the Awesome Kong could beat Asuka, you know, or Asuka, you know, would be a good feud for her.
I echo Aaron. Actually, Awesome Kong was my idea. I think that's a perfect type of, like, oh, you know, she's like a better Nia Jax, right? She's experienced, she's huge, she can counter the kick into the power bomb, she's got experience all over the world, she's won championships all over the world. You know, she would be somebody who, the moment she walks through the door and calls out Asuka, the crowd would go, ooh, she can take her down.
Aaron, you know, we can camp out outside Full Sail and see if she shows up.
Ah, that's cool. I'm good with that.
So,
we chant "We want karma"?
well, you know, we could say karma something, but anyway. So, I'm just going to say match of the night, or, and probably match of the weekend. DIY against Revival. I'll just say it might be the best, not the best, but top five matches I've seen this year. Roger, what did you think about this match?
This match was better than I expected, and that's saying something because their match at Brooklyn was phenomenal. I expected this match to be good. This goes to show that the Revival, and no disrespect to DIY, but the Revival truly are the best tag team, in my opinion, on the planet. They have been throwing outstanding matches all year long, whether it was with Alpha, Enzo, and Cass. I thought even their match at Roadblock was really good. The matches with DIY are really good. They get it, right? They just understand tag team wrestling. My only fear with them is that I do not want them on Raw under any circumstances. Like, they desperately need to be on SmackDown, because not only I think is the talent over on SmackDown better, they will be utilized properly on SmackDown. Like, I just have this fear that the Revival goes to Raw and they're going to do some stupid comedy sketch where they're both dressed up as doctors making ball jokes. Not that I think WWE would ever do that to two bald guys coming in, because that would be stupid, but I'm just saying it could happen.
I actually don't think that that's going to happen, and the main reason I say that is because we already have Anderson and Gallows on Raw, and so I don't think that they would put two bald guys over there that, you know, not that they look the same, but they would look similar enough that, you know, Vince would probably be like, oh, no, put them on SmackDown.
I wonder if Vince is like, they're too small. Like, that's just, I'm wondering if that's his opinion on them. But Doug, what do you think?
I agree with what Roger said. The only way that they're going to get over is if they are booked properly, whether it be on Raw or whether it be on SmackDown. They definitely thrived when they were in the title hunt, whether it was with them with the titles or going for the titles. That is where they absolutely did their best work. If they try to throw them in there and just make them job for a little bit, you are going to see the Revival become that and just jobbers. They have to go in. They have to put on the matches. They have to be able to have something on the line to do it, because that is where they did their best sly work, whether it's the, fake, I'm going to run in so that the referee doesn't see the tag kind of stuff. The fact that he goes underneath the ring to grab the feet of the other person to pull him away from a tag. I mean, those are all great things and silly things. And it is just those little tricks or gimmicks or everything that you see of them. Even though these are guys that can talk, they don't really do it too much on NXT. They let the fist talk for them kind of thing. But I remember when we were down for WrestleMania and in the, what is it, the crowd
access,
and just listening to him taunt, both of them taunt the crowd, or even in the ring, they were taunting the other person. These are very charismatic people that you don't see that part of it on NXT, but these guys definitely have that it factor. So I do want to see them come up, but they need to be booked right. So they definitely need to be on SmackDown. They definitely need to be in the title race right away to put them up against Alpha again, or put them up against another team that they can definitely thrive on. Give them those squash matches, you know, put them up against Breeze Dango or the Golden Truth or whatever, and just have them crush them to make their dominance known, and then get up to, you know, where even if they were to face a Gallows and Anderson, where it looks like, yes, they should get dominated, but they can put up a really good fight and they use their tricks to win or whatever they have to do and get the win.
You know, what's amazing is that even though the Revival lost this match, DIY won it. They win the tag titles after a really long journey, and it was a great match, one of the best tag matches I've ever seen. But we're talking about the Revival more than we are DIY, which goes to show that that type of a heel tag team can really work, and in such a way that we're not cheering for them in the same way we're cheering for Kevin Owens or Jericho. We're cheering for them. And we're not necessarily cheering. We're booing them. We're booing them because they're supposed to be booed. And they're working the crowd in the best possible way. And the Revival, I really hope that other tag teams and single stars take notice to what they're doing, because that's what a heel is supposed to be. And I mean, kudos to both of them, to Dash and Dawson. I mean, they do such a fantastic job.
Although, which one's Dash and which one's Dawson?
You know, I don't know. Which one's Blake, which one's Murphy? I don't know.
Well, Blake is beautiful body Blake. So
yeah, you can always remember that. Right. Yeah. And Andy, I want to ask you, moving on to the main event, we had Shinsuke versus Joe. Joe defeats Shinsuke to become the first ever two-time NXT heavyweight champion. What did you think of the match, and what did you think of Joe winning the title?
Okay, so the match itself, I thought it was good, but I expected more. I don't know how to explain it. I wanted more from this match, and the fact that Joe won with basically a low blow and then a quick judo throw onto the steps and then brings him in for Muscle Buster. I thought that the way that it transitioned for him to win was good, but I'm just disappointed that Shinsuke had the belt and then they took it off him. I just don't understand the point of that. What do you think, Doug?
I agree that this was a good match, not great match. I thought it moved a little slow. I know that's the kind of style you'd go with Joe, though. But I was expecting more too. And I good match, good pay per view quality match, just not what I was expecting out of the two. Very surprised at the finish, especially knowing that they're going over to Japan. But we'll see. I mean, obviously they're going to have another rematch, which kind of, you know, is starting to get along those lines of how many times do we have to see Joe versus Nakamura before it's going to get way too old? And can they really add anything to the matches we've already seen to make it different, to make it fresh and do something new?
So it's funny, I actually really enjoyed this match. Right when there was a point where Joe did a move I'd never really seen before. It was like an atomic drop, but he crossed Nakamura's knees. So when Nakamura hit, it looked like his knees were really busted, which I thought was great storytelling because it really took the kicks, good vibrations, and the Kinshasa really out of play. Like, he could do it, but it just doesn't have as much impact. So it made it believable that Joe was going to wear him down. I liked the slower pace because it seemed like Joe was slowly but surely beating Nakamura down to a point where he was just going to finish him off. I had no problem with the low blow because it's a heel move, right? I kicked you there, kind of like what AJ did to Ambrose. I kicked you low because I had the opportunity, not because I needed to, but because I wanted to. Then I thought, you know, it was a good callback to putting him out in the stretcher by hitting the Uranagi under the steps, and then the Muscle Buster put him away. I was surprised. I thought Nakamura was going to win it and he would transition into a feud with Rude. But at the same time, I think that story still has legs. I think it was very hot with the way that they had Nakamura gone for 3 weeks and Joe just destroyed it. I expect a little bit of a reversal. I think Nakamura is going to be the one who's a little bit more violent as he comes after Joe. To me, I think this needs to be a gimmick match in the end. It needs to be last man standing, because the way that they have kind of escalated their fight, it needs to be a final curtain. Whoever knocks you out wins the title and we're done. So I think the next takeover will be, you know, we have to beat you so badly that neither one of you can get up. Maybe they do a stretcher match. I hope not. But I think last man standing is a good way to conclude this feud. And then it's time for Joe to probably go to the main roster.
Yeah. And I would say, you know, to Doug's point, I agree with you, Doug, about you don't want to, you know, do this too much. I felt that they did that with Joe and Finn, because I think that they were on 3 or 4 pay-per-view matches in total. And then they had other ones in between. And I felt that that one, they overdid it a little too much. And because of that, I feel it kind of carried over a little bit. Yeah, so it was just 3. But I feel it kind of carried over with Nakamura because, you know, Joe has been in that main event scene, and we have seen with NXT people get called up, you know, after being in the main event for a little while. And with Joe, you know, he's been in the main event for a year, and obviously he's going to continue because he's got the title, so he's going to continue at least till the next pay-per-view. I do think that I agree with you, though. I think that this is a point in time where you do call him up, and you know there's so many great feuds for him. He could go to SmackDown, and he could wrestle John Cena because they're friends, and he would have no problem probably putting Joe over and making him a good, you know, top tier heel. He could then wrestle with somebody like an Ambrose even, or he could go to Raw. And if they build him up properly, you could see Joe versus Lesnar and have it believable, not have it this like, oh, dream scenario. It could be a believable scenario where it's Lesnar versus Samoa Joe at a like WrestleMania where you're like, I cannot wait to see that. I cannot wait to see these two try and tear each other apart. You know, so I agree. I think that, you know, he needs to come up sooner rather than later. He's in his late 30s. You know, he's only got so many bumps left on his bump card. You gotta pull the trigger.
Aaron, do you believe that if Joe went to Raw, he would be booked properly?
Look at what they've done to Bayley.
Oh my gosh! Don't even get me started on that. Don't even get me. You're the best women's wrestler in NXT. Next to then Asuka comes in. And then they move you, and then just great, just can wrestle perfect. I thought she had great matches the entire time she was in NXT. And then you move her to Raw, and you basically flush it down the drain.
Well, everything, you put her with Dana Brooke, who can't even carry a pigeon or something. I mean, seriously, how do you expect somebody to get over when you put them in such a, I mean, here, we're going to make you carry this heavy, heavy load up a giant hill. And if you can't get 20 steps up, we're going to stop pushing you.
Like, I'm sorry, Shawn Michaels in his prime couldn't carry Dana Brooke to a 3-star match. Like,
right.
She's just awful. Like, she just sucks. Like, she just is not ready. She shouldn't have been called up, you know, in 2 more years. So, yeah, but it's not even just Bayley, right? Look at how many people went to Raw and just stunk. Sasha Banks is not the same boss that we saw in NXT. Charlotte, probably the only one who's really flourished in Raw. Sami Zayn is not the same Sami Zayn that we saw in NXT on Raw. You know, Kevin Owens finally has broken through. But for the last year, we were talking about how misused Kevin Owens was. Look at how misused Cesaro is. It feels like Raw is a graveyard for anybody with wrestling talent. But if Bayley were on SmackDown, I have no doubt in my mind that we'd be enjoying her feuds and matches. If they can book Nikki Bella properly, they could book Bayley properly.
And that's, I think, goes to the point of Joe going to Raw. You know, they probably wouldn't have anything ready for him. So he would have to go to SmackDown. And he could have really great matches there. And he could, you know, be put into some really great feuds that would last for a couple of months. You know, somebody like a Randy Orton, a Bray Wyatt, you know, Ambrose, AJ, obviously, because they have such a long history and so many other great people over on SmackDown. And on Raw, because they have so much time, they just say, yeah, just go out there and do something, you know, and it just seems like he would get lost in the shuffle. And so I think SmackDown, and that's one of the reasons I like SmackDown so much, is I feel that Raw's, I can miss Raw and I don't feel bad about it. If I miss SmackDown, I probably would be like, man, I want to go back and see it. Raw, nah, I can read what happens.
Funny story. So with Raw, I have actually not been watching it. I go to the Hulu one and I keep fast forwarding.
Ah, Andy joined us on the Hulu.
I'm telling you now, it gets to the point where you're like, oh, jeez. And then you want to know, what did they cut out? Like, if this was crap, what was the half hour, 40 minutes that you removed? I just want to know what that is. But, oh, well. Yeah,
it always is fascinating that that's the best 90 minutes they had. Because right. If that's the best 90 minutes, I'm a little worried about what I didn't see.
It's actually funny just watching my Hulu, because it's just like click, click, all right, speed up, click, 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 click. And then like within 10 minutes, you're done. And you're like, I didn't get anything out of that, but oh well. Going back with NXT TakeOver, I love the TakeOvers. So far, I think there was only one that I was like, I didn't like that one. And then there's been some where you're like we actually saw one in Dallas where it was probably the best one they've done so far. So I'm just looking forward to everything with NXT, where they're going to go from here, because we're going to see one in January with Royal Rumble, and then we'll see another one around WrestleMania. So, but anyways, oh, we forgot to talk about the Dusty Rhodes Classic. The match had, was it Elric? Was in the cage above the ring. What the heck? I mean, and I will say
it's a throwback to what he did like 30 years ago. That's why they did that.
But I like the fact that one of the TM61 guys went up there and then jumped off. And I thought
I liked that the chain got, when he went to hit him with the chain, it went into the crowd and hit a guy in the crowd.
Yeah, that was crazy.
I would have grabbed a razor blade and been like, "Oh, bleeding."
Hey, right. Listen, they're the authors of pain. They didn't say they were just the authors of pain inside the ring. If you're at ringside, yeah, you might get chained in the face.
I wonder if it says that on the bottom of the ticket or the back of the ticket.
They'll have to start doing that. On face.
Yeah. Please pay attention to the sport. Fiends may come flying at you.
But overall, I'm very happy with NXT. So it was a good weekend of wrestling. So I look forward to doing the next show. Or is the next show, Aaron? Is that our year end awards? Or are we going to do?
We'll have a special for that one. So we'll do our December, pay per views, and then after that, we'll have our wrap up, and we'll go over our end of the year awards. It'll probably just be a shorter show, but we'll talk about that stuff in depth and get ready for 2017.
All right, so that's all the time we have for this month's show. If you're into the Twitter, you can follow the show at AuthorMark86. I want to thank 86 Productions for hosting and editing the podcast, and I want to thank all of our listeners for taking the time to download and listen to the show. And for Roger Cave, Doug Hahn, and Aaron Hughes, I am Andrew Hughes, and until next time, we'll see you in the ring.